So I've been racking my brains all day trying to think of a bit before the theme music to do, right? And then I recorded the whole podcast and I still couldn't think of anything. So I'm recording this after I've recorded the whole episode. I still can't think of anything at all. This is it. This is like, I don't know what to say. That's the point, isn't it? I don't know what to say before the theme music. I think in a way I'm saying it. Run the theme music.
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you.
What's this? What's this?
Well, says he, my trusty old Red Ryder carbine action 2 on the shot range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to the Total Christmas Podcast. It's fantastic to have you here. I've missed you. I really have missed you. I sat in a corner crying. My wife's going, "Why are you crying?" I'm saying, "I miss my friends." She says, "You haven't got any friends." I go, "Okay, not my friends, my audience. I miss the people that listen to my podcast." And she said, "No one listens to your podcast." I said, "Three people do. Three people listen. Not this time of year. At Christmas, three people listen. This time of year, I get one sometimes. I have a very complicated life. Can we do the interactive bit? Why not? We do it every week. Why this week? We didn't do it last week. I remember that. You didn't want to do it last week. You want to do it this week? Alright. No, you don't have to explain it all. I'm not that bored. Do you want to forget it then? No, forget it. Forget it. You've ruined the whole show already. It's been like, what, 1 minute 30 seconds? We're at 1 minute 30 seconds into the show and you've ruined it. I'm furious. You've ruined Christmas. Another Christmas ruined. And scene. Right, what am I doing now? Oh, do you know what? Remember last week I was going, "No one emails me this time of year. Everyone hates me. Boo, boo, boo." Well, do you know what? I've got four emails. Four emails. Yeah. One of them was from a young lady called Jeannie Mulligan. And you know what? I was thinking about her. Occasionally she pops into my head. I think, do you know what? I haven't heard from Jeannie for a while. And I almost got around to emailing. I thought, it'd be a bit weird if I emailed a listener and said, "No, I'm just checking. I haven't heard from you in a bit. Are you still listening? Do you care?" I sort of think, if no one's listening, I'm not going to sort of like try and nudge him and say, "Come and listen to my crap again." I'm not going to do that. But she hadn't been listening. She got out of the routine. So now she's caught up on all the old episodes. It was lovely to hear from her. Really nice. I also got an email from Scott Newman, who really enjoyed the last episode. Very kind of you, Scott. I appreciate that. It's very nice coming from a fellow podcaster. That was a lovely email. He said he enjoyed it so much he wanted to listen to it again. Glutton for punishment, I say. I also got an email from my mate John in California. He didn't put his surname. We don't need it. We're on first name basis. He put that he only got four in the quiz. Yeah, which makes me feel a little bit guilty because I feel like I'm putting really difficult questions in there, but they're not that difficult, John. Do the research. But that was nice to hear from him. I just appreciate the email. It's nice to reach out and make contacts. That was good. Thank you for that, John. And I also heard from our American Scandinavian correspondent, Benji Pearson. And he got five on the quiz. Yeah, I think he was just trying to act the big man in front of John there. Poor John with only his 4 out of 10. Well done, Benji, for getting 5. But this is cool, right? Because he's put Kalayanka. Now, Kalayanka is one of the questions in the quiz last episode. I don't know if you remember, I said, in which country do they watch Donald Duck every Christmas Eve? And it was Sweden. Because don't forget, Benji is my American Scandinavian correspondent. He's put Kalayanka, pronounced Kalayanka, which is how I pronounced it, because I know how to pronounce verbs. It's on at 3 p.m. prompt on Swedish television, like the King's Speech the next day, because we have the King's Speech is at 3 p.m. See, do you know what? I'm still getting used to saying the King's Speech instead of the Queen's Speech. You know, it's been 40 odd years of my life calling it the Queen's Speech, and then the King comes in, makes life difficult for me. Where was I? Oh yeah. Because don't forget, in Sweden, they celebrate Christmas on Christmas Eve. Because they've got no patience. They can't wait. There's no restraint there. Unlike us Brits. We know how to wait. Where was that? Oh yeah. So he's put, it's on at 3 p.m. prompt on Swedish television, leaving the Swedes plenty of time to go to the pub and get in a blinder of a fist fight. That's nice, isn't it? Lovely. And then finally he's put, which is really cool, at our house, we watch our Kalayanka DVD as the final event before the kids go to bed on Christmas Eve. Isn't that great? He's not pretending to be our Scandinavian-American correspondent. He really lives it. Good for you, Benji. Fantastic work. And thank you to everyone that emailed me. Made me feel kind of special at Christmas. Now let's get started with the show. Ready, steady, commence. Do you know what, I thought I'd start the episode with this segment because I like it so much and it's so uplifting, and annoyingly Bob hasn't got the little bit at the start where he goes, "Thanks Jack," so I can't say my bit where I say, "Bob, you're looking gorgeous." I can't say that. I'm just going to say, here's the segment.
Mother Teresa once said that kind words can be short and easy to speak, but their echoes, they are truly endless. For this episode, it is important to stress that we as humans are good at showing genuine compassion and sympathy, especially to those who have experienced a death or are dealing with a serious illness. We have customs and rituals that will kick in, so we know how to respond with these more serious concerns. However, we can overlook or forget those who are dealing with some real life stressful and ongoing issues. We often know someone who is experiencing a job loss, a divorce, or dealing with or battling an addiction. I know that these situations can be emotionally messy or uncomfortable to talk about because we don't know how to help. Plus, they aren't dealt with or fixed quickly. They can linger and remain for months or years. With a death or illness, we respond with kind words and support. But with a divorce or a job loss, addiction, these can often be met with severe judgment, critique, or even scorn. We tend to play the judge and jury towards these situations instead of just placing ourselves into their shoes. After you hear this, if you know someone who may be facing one of these challenges, just reach out. Make it a priority to express kindness, appreciation, and support. Offer to get a drink or just a kind word. Let them know that you're thinking about them. We always need to remember that we are stronger together than we are divided. If we can keep that Christmas spirit alive and carry a smile of joy, we are more likely to give and show love in our daily lives. If you have some easy ways to be considerate or do good deeds, you let Jack know, he'll tell me, and we'll throw our arms around the world.
That's another lovely one, wasn't it? I feel like I should go and do something about that. So yeah, after I finish recording, then maybe I'll try and do something. Good one, Bob. As ever, he'll be back again later on, but now it's time for this. This is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz. Okay, boys and girls, it's the quiz. Yes, I know how much you love it, and I know this is the highlight of your fortnight, so sit back and answer these. Question number one. Which real-life married couple plays Santa and Mrs. Claus in the 2018 film The Christmas Chronicles and the 2020 sequel? Okay, pretty easy that one, I think, boys and girls. Question number two. Which 1983 gothic horror novel by Suzanne Hill is narrated by lawyer Arthur Kipps, and on one Christmas Eve he is with his wife Esme and four stepchildren telling ghost stories? Why have I got that in there? I have not got the slightest idea. I tell you what, if you get that right, I should give you 2 points. 1983 gothic horror novel by Suzanne Hill. No idea. Okay, right, question number three. Who had the 1989 Christmas number one single with the song Do They Know It's Christmas? Okay, 1989, boys and girls. Question number four. In Germany, who is Der Weihnachtsmann? Weihnachtsmann. Whom is that? Tell me. Question something or other. The one with the holiday armadillo is a 2000 episode of which American sitcom in which the costume shop has run out of Santa outfits? That's quite an easy one. We're back on track now, kids. Question number something. In the second decade of the 2000s, which Canadian singer has been declared by some in the media to be the King of Christmas? I'm not impressed with that question, to be honest, kids, right? Declared by some in the media. How many some? Do you know what I mean? It's like, is it one, two people saying, yeah, he's the King of Christmas? Well, I would have said Cliff Richard is the King of Christmas because he's had two Christmas number ones and they were Christmas-based songs. It's not just having a lucky hit at number one. Both his songs are about Christmas. Beat that, Michael Bublé. Oh, that was a clue. Right, question number, whom cares? Which character speaks the last words, God bless us, everyone, in A Christmas Carol? Who's that then? Easy one. Next one. Which children's book by Monty C. Pepin is about a tow truck and a snowblower who rescue Tom Transport, who is stuck in a snowdrift with all the town's Christmas presents? Now, I'm not kidding, kids. I don't expect you to get this one. I don't expect you to get it at all. But I read this question, and the answer is actually quite humorous. So let's ask that question one more time. Which children's book by Monty C. Pepin is about a tow truck and a snowblower who rescue Tom Transport, who is stuck in a snowdrift with all the town's Christmas presents? Okay, next one. What are we up to? Oh, number 9 already. Holy crud. Where does the time go, boys and girls? Which touring truck first appeared in the UK in 1995 at the start of the Holidays Are Coming advertising campaign, and in 2021, after being cancelled in 2020, got back on the road starting in Glasgow on 24th of November? That's a long-winded question, isn't it? Just to say, right, what's this Holidays Are Coming truck? What are they trying to sell you? And the last one, which children's TV characters were the best-selling toys at Christmas 1997? And then it says, and which of the four characters was the biggest seller of them all? Wow, that's tricky, that is, isn't it? I'll tell you what, I'm going to give you 2 points on that one. So there's a total of, I'm offering you two for the other question. It's a total of 12 points today, because don't think anyone's going to get either of those. Okay? Well, we'll find out now, won't we? Because I'm doing the answers. Crikey. Question number one. Which real-life married couple plays Santa and Mrs. Claus in the 2018 film The Christmas Chronicles and the 2020 sequel? Well, I can tell you now, there is no married couple playing those characters, okay? Because Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell aren't married, all right? They've been living in sin for 40 years, but they never got married. So well done, the biggest Christmas quiz book ever. You've let yourself down once again. However, I will give you a point if you said Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn. Or you can also have a point if you put Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell. However, you won't get a point if you put Kurt Hawn and Goldie Russell. Okay? Okay. Next one. Which 1983 gothic horror novel by Suzanne Hill is narrated by lawyer Arthur Kipps? And on one Christmas Eve, he is with his wife Esme and four stepchildren telling ghost stories. Do you know what? I've no idea why I added that in there. I don't know why I chose that one out of all the questions in here. And I can tell you, boys and girls, it was The Woman in Black. Here's the deal. I have seen the film The Woman in Black with Daniel Radcliffe. I watched it at the cinema with my wife. We weren't married at the time. She was my girlfriend at the time. I cannot remember a blooming thing about it, and I certainly can't remember any Christmas scene. But there you go. I hope someone got that. You got 2 points, I said you could have for that one, didn't I? If you got it, 2 points. Who had the 1989 Christmas number one single with the song Do They Know It's Christmas? If you put Band Aid, you're wrong. Because it was actually Band Aid 2, which is a song that I covered in a previous episode. Yeah, I did. I talked about it and it was a lot of different artists, people like Kylie Minogue, Jason Donovan, Wet Wet Wet, Bros. Do any of these bands mean anything to you? Lisa Stansfield. I mentioned Lisa Stansfield, how great her singing was. Next thing I know, I've lost a listener because he emailed, but I forget who it was. I've forgotten his name. I've heard from him in ages. He emailed me and he said, I'm really sorry. I was listening to your podcast and you mentioned Lisa Stansfield and I had to go and listen to some of her music and I forgot all about your podcast, but I'm back listening now. It's like 2 months later. Can you believe that? Half of you don't even know who Lisa Stansfield is. Anyway, it was Band Aid 2. We've discussed that. Right. In Germany, who is the Weihnachtsmann? Now, here's the deal, boys and girls, right? It says in the book, Santa Claus. Now, I wasn't too sure about that, and I wanted to double check. And if you look up the word Weihnacht, that means Christmas. A man, I'm pretty sure, means man. So it means Christmas man, not St. Nicholas. So there you go, or Santa Claus, as they put in the book. But here's the thing, right? If you Google Why Nuts Man, or you put it in the translating machine on Google, it comes up as Santa Claus. But then you take off the man bit and leave Why Nuts, it comes up as Christmas. So surely it's Christmas Man, not Santa Claus. That's what they call Father Christmas, Christmas Man. There you go. We've all learned something today, kids. Next one. The one with the holiday armadillo is a 2000 episode of which American sitcom in which the costume shop has run out of Santa outfits? Easy one, that one, wasn't it? It was an episode of Friends. Next one. In the second decade of the 2000s, I'm a bit annoyed about that. But anyway, we'll carry on. His album came out in 2011. So I suppose that does make it the second decade of the 2000s. Anyway, which Canadian singer has been declared by some imbeciles in the media to be called the King of Christmas? It was, of course, Michael Bublé, or as I call him, Mickey Bubble. Next one. Which character speaks the... Oh, for goodness sake, it's so easy. Which character speaks the last words, God bless us, everyone, in A Christmas Carol? That was, of course, Tiny Tim. Or to give him his full name, Tiny Timothy. Which children... Right, this is a bit of fun. I'm not expecting you to get this one. Which children's book by Monty C. Pepin is about a tow truck and a snowblower who rescue Tom Transport, who is stuck in a snowdrift with all the town's Christmas presents? So you ready? It's a tow truck and a snowblower. Okay, you ready for their names? This is it, right? Yeah? It's called... it's called Hookers and Blow Save Christmas. Eh? Yeah! So there's that, isn't there? Oh, John, I might have to look that up actually. Give me a second. Well, I've had a brief gander, and yeah, it's about a tow truck and a snowblower, and they save Christmas. Pretty much what I said in the question, didn't it? I'm not sure if I'll be buying a copy. Right, next question. Which touring truck first appeared in the UK? Right, it's the Coca-Cola truck. Right, it's the Coca-Cola. I'm not going to bother reading the question again. It was the Coca-Cola truck. It was obvious. And a final question. Which children's TV characters were the best-selling toys of Christmas 1997? And which of the four characters was the biggest seller of them all? I was thinking, 97. Oh, was that a bit late for the Power Rangers? It was a bit late for the Power Rangers. Are you ready? This is in the UK, don't forget. It was the Teletubbies. And for your bonus point, the best-selling one was Poe. Poe is the smallest one, wasn't it? Tinky Winky, Dipsy, La La, Poe. Yeah, there we go. That was your 10 questions. Do you want to know what I scored? 7. I got 7. Could have been worse, couldn't it? Could have been 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, or 1. But I didn't. I got 7. Could have been better. 8, 9, or 10. So that's how numbers work, boys and girls. Yeah, I hope you did okay, or if you didn't do okay, I hope you enjoyed it. And if you didn't enjoy it, don't worry, because it's over now. You can move on with your life. And now it's time for this.
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
You're not going to believe this, kids. You're not going to believe this. I sincerely did not know this is what his segment was going to be starting off with. This is a real coincidence. Have a listen to this.
So we've got a new model for the Tiki Bar. Stop in, and we'll make you see double and feel single. Now I have to apologize for today's episode. It is a bit of a convoluted stream of consciousness. It also has its rude innuendo and double entendre. I know this is a Christmas podcast, but I blame it on Saint Basil. I was listening a few episodes back about his miracle story and how all of the villagers weren't paying their taxes because they had, as Jack assumed, spent all of their money on hookers and beer. It reminded me of a cute Christmas story called Hookers and Blow Save Christmas. It is a charming little story written by a Canadian man about how a tow truck and a snowplow saved Christmas. And it can be shared by both youngsters and adults alike. In fact, it is fun to read aloud with the family at holiday gatherings. So this led me to a do you hear what I hear moment when I thought, well, with Canada being part of the British Commonwealth, maybe hookers and blow are what these vehicles are called in the UK. This led me down a rabbit hole with a lot of different regional vehicle names, such as a breakdown lorry, a recovery truck, a tilt and slide, and a beaver tail. I also learned about the gritter and the snow thrower. Now, none of these were called hookers and blow, but it did remind my idle mind to explore another questionable term used in England, bangers. In the U.S., banger has a criminal and sexual connotation. So, you know, hookers, bangers, and blow. But what it doesn't mean is sausages. So why do the Brits use bangers as a slang name for sausages? One popular theory is that during World War I, the sausages had a habit of exploding when cooked to let the steam escape. See, to compensate for meat shortages during the war, the sausages were made with cheap fillers like breadcrumbs, cereal, or rusk. They would sizzle and pop loudly when cooked. Thus, bangers. This simple explanation is based on the verb bang and a belief that it got its name from the sudden loud noise. However, there are older references by the British Navy long before the outbreak of war. The Navy fleet had tinned sausages called bangers that were of high quality. The thought is that this term might have come from their resemblance to a bludgeon or a banger, which is a short, heavy club with one end thicker and heavier than the other. Sausages go back a long way. The Romans first introduced them to Britain in the 4th century. Then, during the rule of Charles I, which was 1625 to 1649, they were finally divided into links. After a few centuries, sausages became a favorite cuisine of the British working class. While we might think that it is common slang, bangers is more of a colloquial term. Most people in Britain won't call them bangers unless they are in a traditional English breakfast or the classic bangers and mash, which you can order at most any pub. The use of the term bangers seems to be confined to these specific dishes, or to bangers in a bun, which are sausages served in a bread roll. Now, in the U.S., we would call a party with a lot more men than women a sausage party. But in the U.K., would that be a banger? Cheers and happy Christmas.
Yeah, so bangers and mash, we do call them bangers. I don't think I say bangers that much. Normally we'd say sausage and mash these days. Bangers is falling by the wayside a little bit. You do still hear it though. And yeah, if we're talking about a party where it's all blokes, we call it a sausage fest or sausage party. Normally sausage fest. Bit of a sausage fest in there, boys. Yeah. Anyway, great segment as ever. Thanks for that one, Bob. And what a coincidence, like I said earlier, about the whole hookers and blow thing. Unbelievable. For those of you that aren't listening to Bob's podcast, I'm furious at you. I am furious. Every episode, I tell you to listen to his podcast, so blooming go and do it. It's the Festive Foreign Film Fans, and they talk about foreign films. Christmas foreign films, or festive foreign films, if you will. It's a great podcast. Him and his mate Mark host it, and they talk about, well, I've just explained it to you. They're Festive Foreign Film Fans. Go and listen to it. Go on, off you go. No, not yet, actually. Wait till the end of the episode. Then you can go. You stay right there. Thank you. Now let's do this. Boys and girls, last episode's joke was a blinder, and I'm pleased to say that I'm keeping it going, because this episode's joke is also a blinder. Are you ready? How does Santa keep track of all the fireplaces he has visited? He keeps a logbook. Hey! Boom! Yes! Goal! Woo-hoo! Yes! And so, as Tiny Tim observed, God bless us, everyone. That's what Christmas is all about, Charlie Brown. What the Dickens? So in this episode segment of What the Dickens, I wanted to talk about Tiny Tim. Now, if you think about it, I think Tiny Tim might well be the second most prominent character in the book. Now, obviously, he doesn't get as much screen time as Bob Cratchit, his dad, or any of the ghosts, but I think his impact on the culture is second only to Scrooge. Now, the most common quote of Scrooge is "Bah humbug," but quite often people will say, "God bless us, everyone." And everyone knows it was Tiny Tim that said that, and although he doesn't appear much in the book or often in the film adaptations, he is a major character. And there's not a massive amount I can say about him. Like I said, in the book, he isn't a big character, but there's a few little things I found when I was researching that I thought you might find interesting. So the first of those is that originally he was going to be called Little Fred. So one of Dickens's brothers was called Fred, and it seems that Dickens was going to name Tiny Tim after his brother Fred. But then he decided against it, not quite sure why. Maybe his brother wasn't too happy about it, I'm not sure, because he did still use the name Fred for Scrooge's nephew. But then I've read a few different things. One place it said he might have been called Little Mick, which I don't know if I would have liked that much. And another one was Phil, I read as well, but only in one place. So I think you can take those with a grain of salt. But in the end, he settled on Tiny Tim. And there's a couple of people that Tiny Tim may have been based on. The one that I think is most likely was his sister, whose name was Fan, just like Scrooge's sister was called Fan. She had a disabled son who was named Henry Augustus Burnett, and he was born in 1839, so he would have been 4 years old at the time that Dickens was writing A Christmas Carol. Sadly, he passed away in 1949, so he only lived to his 10th birthday, which is a real shame. Which brings me to another point. Now, here's the deal. In the original manuscript of A Christmas Carol, Dickens doesn't mention Tiny Tim after Scrooge's redemption. It doesn't mention him at all. No, but for some reason, I don't know why, in the final manuscript, he did decide to go back and let us know that Tiny Tim, who did not die. And he also, not just did he not die, he also became a second father to him. So that's delightful. Now, the fact that he didn't die is kind of a clue to what his illness may have been. Now, in modern day, a number of people have tried to figure out what his illness could have been. Now, there's not that many clues in there, really. It suggests that he's a tiny chap, you know, obviously, his name's Tiny Tim. There's a clue in there. He's got a crutch, he's got a leg brace, and whatever disease it was one that could prove fatal. Now, I've had a bit of a research into it. There were three main suggestions of what his illness could be. And I'm just going to run through what those things could have been. So the first theory was that Tiny Tim suffered from renal tubular acidosis. And this is a kidney disease where your kidneys don't work properly, so they don't manage to filter the acid out of your blood and it stays in your blood. And so you don't get to excrete it through your urine. And the increased acid in your blood can result in kidney stones, bone disease, progressive renal failure, and can cause growth retardation. So this is a disease that does sort of fit the criteria we're looking for. The growth retardation makes him tiny, and the bone disease, which could lead to needing a leg brace. But at the same time, this was something that they did know how to deal with back then. If you were poor, odds were you weren't going to get the care you needed, but if you had the money, which Scrooge could give you, then the symptoms could be reversed and you'd be fit and healthy. So that's one. Yeah, that's renal tubular acidosis. The second one, which is a more common disease and more famous, is rickets, which is a vitamin D deficiency. And rickets really was a widespread problem in London in the 1800s, because in the city it was heavily industrialised and it was really smoggy, so they want a lot of sunlight, and you need sunlight to create the vitamin D in you. And the symptoms of rickets can include soft bones, muscle weakness, joint pain, and osteoporosis, and it also can prove fatal. So that would explain why Tiny Tim needs a crutch, and also why he may have actually died in the future. However, again, this is one that could be dealt with if you had a better diet, or maybe Scrooge paid for him to go out to the country and get a bit more sunlight on his skin, and that could be why he survived. So that's good as well. So yes, number two, possibly rickets. The third one is polio. Now, polio is a viral disease that affects the nerves and can cause paralysis, and it was a worldwide epidemic between the 1840s and up to the 1950s, and it was also associated with children. And the fact that Tiny Tim was supported by a brace, an iron frame, it says in the book, that could suggest polio. The only thing is, the effects of polio weren't really reversible, so it's unlikely that that's the one because there wasn't much they could do about it. So, yeah. And the fourth one is a type of tuberculosis. Now, I've had a couple of different ones, but I'm only going to focus on one, which is also known as Pott's disease. This is tuberculosis, spondylitis, or spinal tuberculosis. So that would suggest that he'd have problems with his back, therefore the reason why he'd need a brace. It also can lead to weight loss, making him tiny, and fatigue and pain, which could be why his dad had to carry him back from church. And the disease usually strikes children under the age of 10. Now, tuberculosis, one of the more famous symptoms is chest problems, but the chest problems associated with tuberculosis tended not to show up too much in younger children. So this is a high possibility. The only downside to this one is that tuberculosis was particularly difficult to treat and wasn't usually curable around the time that Tiny Tim would have had it. Having said that, I also read somewhere else that up to 50% of the population of England had contracted some form of tuberculosis in and around the time that Dickens was writing. Can you believe that? Up to half the population. Obviously, they're not, like, you know, completely done in by it, but yeah, like, people had different versions of it. Yeah. Anyway, I don't know which one it was. Sadly, we'll never know what Dickens was thinking, but what we do know is Tiny Tim did not die, and I think that's the most important bit. At least for Tiny Tim it was, anyway. And his folks, I suppose. So I just thought I'd have a quick chat about Tiny Tim. I hope you enjoyed that. Now it's time for this! Okay, so I've received a few emails from people saying that the joke wasn't actually that funny, and I bigged it up. Now, that is of course true. It wasn't funny, and also I did big it up. But I've got to try and sell it, haven't I? Do you know how many jokes I've done so far in this show? I don't keep track of it. I know I didn't start doing it in the first episode. That'd make it easy, wouldn't it? I could tell you how many it is, because it'd be as many episodes. But I didn't start it in the first episode. I don't know when it started. All I know is it's still going. And after all these jokes, a few of which I've probably repeated, you can't expect them all to be killer. You remember the one last episode about the snowman with the cold shoulder? That was a blinding joke. This joke, all right, maybe it wasn't some of my best material. However, it was Christmas-based. It was just... Why do you have to send me these emails with all your hate speech in at Christmas time in April of all times? Let's just accept that it was a joke, and can we move on, please? I'll try and do better next week. I won't, though, because I've got even less jokes. I've got one less joke than I had this week because I've used it. We're doing the next thing. Here it comes. Whatever this thing is, this better be good. Oh, it is good, actually. I know what it is. Come here. Come on. Come here. Start. You can start now. So, boys and girls, it is part two of my interview with Adam Parker from the Merry Britsmas podcast, and it's me and him chatting again about Christmas in the UK. I'm not going to tell you any more about it, because you can listen to it. It's easier, isn't it? Have a listen. Okay, this is one that I think is an interesting one for us Brits, compared to definitely the States. I was trying to rack my brains for things that we watch every year on TV. Mm-hmm. And the only one that really sprung to mind, maybe two, but one, was The Snowman, which is on every single year. I know they show it two or three times a year as well.
Yeah.
It's normally on Christmas Day, sort of just after the Queen's speech, I think, maybe, or just before. It's been on every year. They also often still show Father Christmas, but I don't think that was on. That's not been on every year. It seems like in more recent years they've had it every year, but I can't think of any other show that we'd watch religiously every year. Not like, say, Charlie Brown Christmas or Mr. Magoo.
No, Grinch, not everyone, no.
Or Rudolph as well in the States. I know they've got a lot that they watch. Can you think of anything else, maybe?
Not in the same vein as those ones. You're right. Like, yeah, The Snowman is something that is so universal on every year. They're, like, so traditional. Like you said, yeah, Father Christmas. It's often, they often come as a double, I notice now. Like, yeah. You know, they'll be on one after another on Christmas Day and on Christmas Eve.
But just a quick one, boys and girls. You've probably heard it talked about, or I know it's been shown overseas as well, but The Snowman is a cartoon, hand-drawn cartoon, of the book by Raymond Briggs. There's no talking in it at all, and it's the film that Walking in the Air comes from. You put We're Walking in the Air, that one. So if you've never seen it, you should watch it, but it's very popular in the UK. Yeah, sorry, carry on, Adam.
Yeah, I can't think of it. I did get for Christmas last year, I got the scarf that David Bowie has in the opening of The Snowman. Yeah, they started selling it to charity. Cool. The Raymond Briggs Foundation, so it's like a charitable thing. You can buy it. So I bought it and I wore it a lot over Christmas. Now, again, you've got things like that I definitely see on every year, like that, again, most people I know watch, but I don't know if it's everyone. Like Mr. Bean's Christmas is one that I like. It's on every year. I definitely watch it. A lot of my family do.
Wait, you think it's on every year?
Yeah, it'll be on somewhere. I'm not, you know, maybe not on Christmas. I think it usually is on Christmas Day or maybe Christmas Eve.
I don't think I'm aware of that. I watched the year before, but only because the girls were watching Mr. Bean and we were watching it anyway. So they watched loads of episodes.
Yeah.
That's when we saw that episode and it was coming up to Christmas when they started getting. I wasn't familiar with that at all. That's funny. Maybe they do. I should look into that.
I'm pretty sure I always see it in the, because I always like, you know, I get the Christmas Radio Times, which again, yep. If you don't know, a very important magazine that comes out in the UK that pretty much most people only buy now at Christmas.
Yeah.
Basically a weekly listings guide.
Adam did cover that in an episode of Merry Britsmas, Boys and Girls. So check
and at
out
Christmas, they'd have a double legend Christmas issue and it's all the TV it's on at Christmas, basically. And when I go through it, I'll make a note of when certain things I see, oh, Mr. Bean's on, or, you know, some of my favourite episodes that might be being shown again. And I always seem to notice Mr. Bean. I always seem to say, oh, it's on then. And it's usually around Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, because it'll be during the day at some point and I'll try and maybe actually sit down and watch it rather than, you know, watch it on a YouTube or something a bit less focused.
I think actually maybe that episode of Father Ted, the Christmas one, I think that might
That's always really, on, I think, probably on Channel 4, definitely.
Not necessarily Christmas Day, but certainly like at least in the week before, I think Channel 4 do tend to show that one. Father Ted was a sitcom about some Irish priests. Set in Ireland on Craggy Island.
Yeah.
So one thing we've got in the UK that is like a yearly tradition now is normally directly after the Queen's speech, I think, is a Julia Donaldson cartoon. It started, I think, nearly 20 years ago with the Gruffalo. Maybe not 20 years ago, but it was a long time ago with the Gruffalo. Have you been watching those?
I watched a few of them, yeah. They're like Zog, was that one of them? I quite like that
one.
Yeah,
Zog, they did Zog and the Flying Doctors another year, so that was two Zog ones. There was Gruffalo first, then the Gruffalo's Child. So just so you know, boys and girls, Julia Donaldson, she wrote the book The Gruffalo, very, very famous book in the UK. I don't know if it's travelled overseas, but she's a best-selling author, one of the best-selling children's books authors in the UK, if not the. She seems to be releasing a book every 10 minutes, actually. I think she's, since we've been chatting, she's released 4 books, but frequently she collaborates with an artist called Axel Scheffler. I hope I said that right. And they've been adapting each year one of their books. The most recent one.
It was the cat one, wasn't it?
Tabby McTatt. Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. Tabby McTatt. Yeah.
Well remembered. Yeah.
Because I remember because they had 2 cat ones were released this year because that one was out on one of the channels and then Mog.
That's right.
There's Channel another 4 cat children's again. Book. Yeah. So, because I remember being like, oh, there's 2 cat animations this Christmas.
Yeah. Do you know what? I think Channel 4 have started to try and do a yearly thing because I don't think it was last year, but the year before, or maybe the year before that, they did The Tiger Who Came to Tea.
Yes, they did.
They did an animated version of that. I watched it, but didn't care for it. I got bored halfway through.
No, I think I watched it, but I don't remember it, which I suppose shows about it.
The problem with the Gruffalo stuff is it's pretty slow.
Mm.
They drag a 5-minute story into a 30-minute show. The animation's nice, it's pleasant, but I think it's almost like it's more for young kids, but they chuck it on prime time and it seems like nearly everyone watches it, and I watch it and I don't mind watching it. I think I find it relaxing, maybe.
Yeah, maybe it is. Yeah, exactly, relaxing Christmas TV kind of, you know. It's usually on Christmas Day, isn't it? So it'll be
Christmas Day. Yeah,
yeah, you know,
prime time Christmas Day, BBC in the afternoon,
post Christmas dinner, in a kind of food coma, people sat around the sofa with their family staring at some beautiful animation kind of slowly melting into the sofa. Maybe that's it, man. That's the draw of it. It's that slow television almost.
Yeah, I think it's straight after the Queen's speech, people are just starting to, they've just sung.
The kids are still awake, but you know, probably should be thinking about going to bed soon as well, the little ones, the littlest ones. You know, calming them down a little bit, maybe that's the plan.
We've watched them every year, and then the girls will continue to watch them a few times, like on repeat a few times after Christmas as well. They've got all the Julia Donaldson, Axel Scheffler books. They are very popular, and girls do like them. But that's an interesting one. I think is like become a tradition, but they don't show the same ones every year. I don't know if they show the Gruffalo every year. I'm sure they want the eye player, so you could dish them out if you wanted. Boys and Girls, the eye player is BBC's streaming service. If you want to watch stuff that was on BBC channels, then you can watch it on what's called the eye player. So that was a big thing, actually, when I was younger. So after the Queen's speech, that's when the big movie would come on. I remember... When Batman was on, that was in 91. I remember the year after that was Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. I remember when Back to the Future was first shown, which I think was 88, the first. No, that can't be right, because it was 80. Actually, no, it could have been 89, maybe.
Christmas, yeah, it was a few years after, yeah.
I remember when it was out. I remember, I recorded it, and I had it for years on VHS that I'd recorded from the TV. That was always the big thing. And normally on ITV, it would be a James Bond film.
Yeah.
After the Queen's speech. Because the Queen's speech is shown on the two main channels in the UK. That's BBC and ITV. And then straight after, they sort of compete for the viewers. And I think the problem in recent years we've got is they're still trying to do it. They tend to show a Pixar one more on BBC. Mm. I think thanks to streaming and also... people could just buy the DVD as soon as it came out and that. And also you had Sky before streaming was a thing. It wasn't such a big deal when a film finally made it to TV. But back when Back to the Future came on TV, like unless you'd rented it from Blockbuster or your local video rental place, you hadn't seen it in 4 years. So here it is again, and you can record it and watch it over and over. So that was a major thing when I was a kid. Not so much these days, but that was...
I remember the Bond things, definitely. I remember there being premieres, when I was a kid. I don't remember what, but I do remember. Maybe Jurassic Park was one of them that I remember.
Yeah, that was definitely one.
And that being on around Christmas, because I remember being quite excited to that, because I loved that film. And then, Bond, we used to watch... My dad was a big Bond fan. I was a big, big Bond fan as well. I remember I had a big book of Bond for... I think I got it for Christmas, actually, one Christmas. And so we'd always try and watch the Bond film. Like, my dad would... Even when I was a bit younger, he'd let me sort of... sit and watch it, even though he sort of... my mom would be like, should he be watching this when he's like 7? But my dad would be like, it's Bond. So we'd watch a bit of Bond on Christmas Day.
That was it. It was very adult Bond for the Bond people. I remember watching them as a very young kid. Like 5 or 6, we'd start watching Bond films. One year I was very young, I was probably 7 or 8 maybe. The Bond film was on versus Superman, and I wanted to watch Superman, and my mum wanted to watch Superman, and my dad and my brother, my older brother, went in my mum and dad's room, because that was the only other TV we had, and they sat and watched James Bond, and we sat and watched Superman. It was breaking families apart on Christmas Day. Like I say, not so much these days is the thing. I remember one year, my mum got Mamma Mia on DVD for Christmas. So that would have been like the year after, or the same year maybe, that Mamma Mia came out, like 6 months after it had come out. It was like that was the big Christmas release. And instead of watching the film that was on, because we weren't impressed with whatever it was, we watched Mamma Mia in the afternoon. And then that night I went round my mate's house, and his mum had been given Mamma Mia. And they were watching Mamma Mia. And I was thinking, I wonder if, because you've got so many channels now, and all the I think this was before streaming, but you still had everyone had Sky, and there was like all the Freeview channels and everything. So you had dozens of channels to choose from. I wonder if Mamma Mia is possibly the most watched film on Christmas Day this year. And it's unlikely. I reckon it would have been
pretty high.
That was an easy present.
For moms and precisely.
That film was massive in the UK. I mean, it's massive around the world, but it sold DVDs by the bucket load.
Yeah. It's a perfect mom gift for a kid.
It is ideal, yeah. £10, job done. So, can you think of any other classics then? I mean, it did used to be the big thing was if Only Fools and Horses was on.
Yeah.
Quite often, I know this isn't so much the same in other countries, but in the UK, sitcoms, they have a Christmas special. Like that's what you talk about nearly every episode. Is you'll talk about one of the Christmas specials. These aren't just episodes that are part of the normal season that are Christmas related. These are actually specially made to be shown
standalone.
Standalone. Yeah, that's what I was looking for. Not Going Out seems to be one of the big ones that has been for many years, and Mrs. Brown's Boys seems to be very popular still as well.
They've been ongoing.
Probably shows that no one outside the UK has ever heard of. Maybe in Australia, I think possibly. Only Fools and Horses was always massive, and I know that was fairly big in Australia as well, because I remember talking to people about it when I was over there. But Only Fools and Horses was possibly the most popular sitcom we've ever had in the UK. And
oh, it's huge. Christmas, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, huge. And the Christmas episodes were massive. But I'm just trying to think what else has been big. Is it Gavin and Stacey? Like,
that, yeah, like
4 years
ago. There's only two of those. Yeah, they've done. They did the one with the initial series, then came back to do the second Christmas special, didn't they?
Yeah, which was, I think, the most watched show that year.
Yeah.
On Christmas Day, which is like the biggest ratings day of the year. Yeah.
There's another couple that I can think of that have, again, kind of in the last 15, 20 years become staples of Christmas television. Doctor Who.
Of course.
Yeah, which actually moved away from, so they'd have a Christmas special every year when it got restarted in the 2000s. And I've covered quite a few of those on my podcast. And then they moved away from Christmas episodes and started doing New Year's Day episodes. But this year they're going back to Christmas episodes again. So well, it's a Christmas Day. Was it last year? There was one. I think there was one last year, wasn't there? Just Christmas just gone. There was a Christmas Day episode of Doctor Who.
It was on Christmas Day. I couldn't remember. Yeah. I thought they had gone back to Christmas Day, or they were going to.
I think they have now. And then this year's going to be a Christmas one as well. And the other one that I never watched this show any other time of the year, but the last few Christmases, I've always watched it because of my mom and my mother-in-law, is Call the Midwife Christmas special.
Oh, of course, yeah.
They do a Christmas special every year for however long it's been on, I think.
Yeah.
And I never watched that show ever, but my mum and my mother-in-law both like it. And so whenever we're around the house, it ends up being on, because we go, oh, go on, put it on, you know, to my mum. Like, they're like, oh, no, we won't watch it. No, put it on. So we put it on, and we all sit and watch some very sappy saccharine. So there's always some baby being born somewhere and has to go and get help from the midwives. It's set in like 1940s.
I think it was the 50s.
Is it later than that? 50s?
Yeah, 60s.
And I always enjoy it. It's very saccharine and sappy, but I only ever watched it at Christmas. And so they must have had one. Definitely the last 4 or 5 years, I've watched it at Christmas on Christmas Day with my mom.
Yeah, see, I haven't watched all of them, but you're right. That is every single year now. It's a proper tradition that they're going to have an episode of Call the Midwife, which I think Christmas Day is pretty much the only day I will watch terrestrial TV.
Yeah.
All day. I don't think we watch any streaming on a Christmas Day. I think we do tend to watch we might pull out a DVD for the morning for the girls. So like a Christmas film.
Yeah.
I say a Christmas film. It's always Santa Claus the Movie. We chuck out
great film.
Morning. That's like a tradition for us, which is a film that does get shown pretty much every Christmas in the UK. Normally on Christmas Day in the morning, actually. Although I mentioned this on the show, it might have been last year, I think, or the year before. It was definitely in the last 2 years. That was the prime time film that ITV showed. After the Queen's speech, they went with a film that was over 30 years old. Is it nearly 40 years old? Is that right?
It's 86.
Yes, nearly 40 years old. And they stuck on Santa Claus the Movie, a film that elsewhere in the world people have forgotten about, but we still hold
still
it dear.
So
that's, but Christmas Day is pretty much the only day we watch terrestrial TV. And we do watch the King's speech now. Yeah, we do watch that. Anything else about TV we need to discuss? We covered that.
Yeah, I don't think so. It's like with any, you know, like the same with American television. There's so many, as I do on my podcast, I try and cover an episode every month. And there are so many. And it's quite interesting, because I do watch a lot now for the podcast. I don't watch the main show, but I watch the Christmas episode or the Christmas special of it. And you see a glimpse into a TV show that's maybe something you haven't seen before. But in terms of those traditional ones like the American Rankin Bass, we don't have those yet. Maybe apart from The Snowman, I think that's the only one.
The Snowman is the only one, yeah. I was trying to think of Christmas films that are like made in the UK that might have endured, and I can't actually think of any.
Apart from maybe Santa Claus the Movie, but again, that is only in Britain.
Well, it's an American film, though.
I
meant like a British film. We've had British Christmas films, but they just don't seem to. Like, did you ever watch Get Santa?
Yeah. I think I watched that with my nephews. I think I took them to the cinema to go see it, actually. I do remember that. And yeah, it was okay. It was a fine British Christmas film. Nativity as well.
Nativity.
I think stuck around, and they did a bunch of sequels that got worse as they went on. I liked how the actors got slightly like less impressive. It started Martin Freeman was in the first one. And, you know, Martin Freeman now is a huge star. Then David Tennant, who's still a big star, but not a big movie star, more of a TV star, I'd say, than a movie star. And then Martin Clunes, I think, was in the third one.
Well, it's Martin Clunes, it was just a TV star.
Just a TV star, less than David Tennant. And then I don't even watch the fourth one, which I think is called Nativity Rocks. I never saw it. I don't know who's in it.
I don't think any of the actors are the same, actually.
No.
Even Mr. Poppy is a guy that looks a bit like Mr. Poppy. Yeah, but Boys and Girls, the Nativity series of films, I've talked about them on the show before. They're pretty much films about nativity in schools. Like, so the school nativity
primary
show.
School performance, yeah, the primary yeah. school.
That's it, exactly, yeah. Yeah, my girls love them, actually.
Yeah,
they like all of them.
Kids do love it, yeah. My nephews love the nativity films. I think they watched all of them when they were growing up, definitely.
Yeah. Other than that, I'm trying to think if there are any other British films that...
The only other sort of big one, which I think it was mostly made in Britain, was Love Actually, that I'd say has persevered as a British Christmas film.
Yeah, Love Actually, definitely.
But again, more of a... It's not really a family Christmas. And I always forget how unfamily it is until I watch it.
Oh, yeah.
I watch it every year.
Bit of nudity, isn't there?
It's got quite a bit of nudity and quite a bit of swearing.
Not as much as I'd like, but it's got a bit.
Yeah, and I always forget it's Stacey from Gavin and Stacey as well is one of the nude pair with Martin Freeman.
Yeah, there he is.
Every year I go, oh, it's Martin Freeman and Stacey in the buff. Because we watch it every year, me and my wife. It's a bit of a tradition for us now that I don't even know how it started, but we watch it 5 weeks before Christmas because that's when the film starts. So we kind of use it as like a, I don't know, it's really imminent now. It's 5 weeks till Christmas and the film starts then. So we watch it on whichever, usually maybe not exactly the day, but on the weekend that's sort of 5 weeks to Christmas leading up to.
Yeah. Do you know what? I didn't know that. That's funny. I'll have to start watching it 5 weeks before. I don't watch it every year. I do like it, but I don't love it. Yeah.
It's got hit and miss stories. There's some stories that we love and then some stories that we just kind of make fun of throughout, but that kind of makes it fun as well.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, movie-wise, I guess we sort of tend to watch the same ones as they would all around the world.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of the American ones still have that, you know, Elf and Home Alone and all those films are the ones that just as big over here as they are over there. Whereas I don't think there's been really, apart from, I don't know, has Love Actually really become big over there? I'm not sure.
I think it is. I don't think it's quite as big as it might be in the UK. But yeah, it did pretty well at the box office. And I think listening to other podcasts, they tend to talk about it a bit. So yeah, I think so. What's your favourite Christmas film?
It changes a lot, to be honest, depending on the year. Santa Claus the Movie's up there. That is one from my childhood. I watched it so much as a kid, Santa Claus the Movie. We had it on VHS. And I'd watch it over and over again every year. So that usually...
The copy we've got actually came free with News of the World, the newspaper. I don't know if this happened in your country, boys and girls, but newspapers in the UK, the Sunday editions, went through a phase of just giving out a DVD, in a cardboard sleeve, with the newspaper. And one year, one Christmas, that's my copy of Scrooge, the Alistair Sim version of A Christmas Carol.
Oh, yeah, love that one as well.
That I got from The Sun, actually, that I still watch every year. So, yeah, The News of the World and The Sun, which shows how highbrow I am. It's not actually, it was my mother-in-law's. She gave them to me from her papers. But, yeah, that's our version of Santa Claus the Movie. Sorry, carry on.
I love National Lampoon as well, because that's my dad's favourite.
Okay.
And so we'd watch it together sort of growing up quite a bit. So I really like National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. And one that I'm going to give a shout out to, one that I always put in my top few, and no one's really heard of it, and I watch it every year religiously, is it was a made-for-TV movie in the UK called Flint Street Nativity. Have you heard of Flint Street?
Yeah, I've
definitely
it.
Mentioned it on the podcast
on
before. Yeah, it is on YouTube,
I think I watched it after you talked about it.
Yeah.
But I saw it when it came out as well. Is that a movie? It's only 40 minutes long, isn't it?
It's about an hour and five or something.
Oh, is it?
Like that. It's called a TV movie, I think is how it describes, which, I'll put into a movie category. But maybe something nostalgic about it. It's a primary, set in a primary school, following a nativity performance, and all of the characters are little kids played by adult actors.
Yeah.
And it's all British comedy TV actors in the UK. People like Frank Skinner and Julia Sawalha and
Neil Morrissey.
Neil Morrissey, exactly. Ralph Little. And I just love it. It makes me laugh. It makes me genuinely cry in parts, like every year, because it's quite sentimental. And there's some kids struggling with a lisp, and someone whose dad is breaking up with their mom, and the dad doesn't turn up to the nativity. It's making me feel a bit emotional now. I love it. And not enough people watch it. And I always say on my I try and mention it on my podcast quite a lot, to be honest, if I can. Yeah, Flint Street Nativity would be up there, I think.
That's one that should be a regular. Actually, or they should show that every year on.
I'm surprised it's not on TV. Every year,
because I'm sure they could just chuck it on.
Exactly, cream of British talent, great British TV talent, and it's funny and sweet. I wonder if there's some rights or licensing problem with it. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's on YouTube, isn't it? No one's gonna drag it off. That's got to be 25 years old, do you reckon?
Probably. I think it came out in like 99, something like that.
25 years.
Yeah.
Wow. That is a good one. I like Muppets Christmas Carol
Yeah,
I watch Muppets Christmas Carol every year without fail.
Yeah, same.
Not always It's a Wonderful Life though. I say not every year. I probably missed it 3 times in the last 20 years. So you know, I do tend to watch it every year, but I'm not every year. And then I do watch Alistair Sim's version of A Christmas Carol every year. But that's something I do on my own. I sit in a darkened room drinking mulled wine and watching that for an hour and a half. I love it. That's my tradition, that is, yeah. But Muppets Christmas Carol, I think, I'd probably say that's my favourite, because I could watch it over and over and over, whereas I don't think I could watch It's a Wonderful Life over. I think what's funny about It's a Wonderful Life, the first time I watched it, I thought it was incredible. It instantly became one of my favourite films of all time. And the more I watch it, the more emotional I find it. And there's bits in it, when I first watched it, I didn't shed a tear, but now I get choked up like 4 or 5 times throughout the film just because I know what's going to happen. It's a wonderful film. It's a wonderful life. Yeah, but again, you know, these are American films that aren't just from the UK. I think The Muppets Christmas Carol is probably more popular in the UK than it is overseas, I would have thought. And also, actually, the Alistair Sim version of Scrooge isn't the go-to version of A Christmas Carol, I think, in a lot of countries.
No, I don't think so.
In the UK, mind you, I haven't said that. I don't even know if it is in the UK. I think it's one of the most popular ones.
I think it's up there, yeah. I think that is often on TV at Christmas. I usually see that in the listings when I'm looking through, because I'll make a note of it and go, oh, maybe I'll put it on while I'm wrapping or doing something.
Oh, yeah, but it's normally later at night as opposed to... The Muppets Christmas Carol, they normally sort of make a big thing about when that's going to be.
Yeah.
I think the Patrick Stewart version is actually quite popular in the UK. I think
I've seen that on TV before as well.
Say that gets shown almost as much, if not more, than the Alistair Sim version.
The musical one that you covered recently as well, I love that film. Again, that's a top 10 Christmas film for me. I watch that often, again, on my own every year, the 1970 musical Scrooge.
That's not the one I covered.
No, you did cover the musical. Oh, you covered the 2004 one, didn't you? Not the 1971.
Did you listen to that episode?
I did.
You emailed me and said that's one of your favourite films.
I do love that one as well. I love any musical Christmas thing, to be honest. I quite like I'm not a massive musical fan generally, but for something about musicals and Christmas really makes me feel extra. Like, yeah, The Christmas Carol, Muppets, the 1971, the 2004 one with Kelsey Grammer. I actually like Spirited, the newer one with Will Ferrell, but
I haven't seen that yet, to my shame. Yeah.
For the songs more than anything, I listened to the soundtrack quite a bit after that. Like, I watched it just before Christmas and it made me feel quite festive every time I listened to it. I love a good Christmas musical.
Did you watch the Netflix remake of Scrooge, the musical?
Wasn't a big fan of that one, to be honest, actually. No, again, I like some of the songs, but the story I thought was a bit duddy.
Yeah, I quite like their take on the Ghost of Christmas Past, the way they did that with like the melting candle.
Yeah,
My girls actually quite liked it. I didn't like the fact that he had a dog.
No, same. That always rankles me when they give Scrooge a dog. I think the 1997 one does that, which has got Nicolas Cage or someone in it or something weird. I can't remember. There was a weird animated one from the late 90s.
I think the one you're thinking of is Tim Curry.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah, and that had a dog, and that made me go, ugh. You can't give Scrooge a dog. It doesn't work.
It even mentions in the text of the book that how like the blind man's dog would turn away.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
If he's kind enough to look after and feed a dog, he's not miserly enough to warrant saving. That's what.
That's it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Again, I had to cut it off a bit sharp there because we went on to talk about something else. But that was good. I really enjoyed chatting to Adam, and I hope you enjoyed learning a bit more about the sort of crud we watch on TV every year in the UK. Because it's such a cold climate here in the UK, especially at Christmas, very dank and cold, everyone stays inside and we do sit around the TV, and that is a big part of Christmas, is the television. So thanks again to Adam for being part of the show. Check out his podcast, it's Merry Britsmas, and it's about Christmas in the UK. Yeah, but now, boys and girls, it is time for this. This episode's recommendation is the Norm Macdonald autobiography, and it's called Based on a True Story. And I've been listening to the audiobook. Now, there are unscrupulous websites on the internet where you could listen to it for free, or you could get it off Audible, whatever suits you. I was a bit of a fan of Norm Macdonald. He wasn't massive in the UK. Not everyone would have heard of him. But I remember watching Dirty Work and thinking it was one of the funniest films I'd seen. And I found Norm's comedy very good. Everything I saw him in, I always enjoyed it. Anyway, I was listening to his autobiography. And it's funny because you're thinking, is any of this actually true? Is any of it true? And I'm guessing no. But it was really funny. It's really funny. I've laughed out loud a lot as I've been listening to it. I haven't completely finished it, actually. I've still got about, well, I don't know. I'll have to check the app how much I've got left on it. But anyway, it's a very funny book. So that's something. I normally recommend a podcast. Well, I couldn't think of it. I'm listening to the same old podcasts at the moment, so I've got nothing new. So if you want to check out something else to shove in your ears, check out Norm Macdonald's audiobook based on a true story. So like I said, there are unscrupulous free websites out there if you want to find it that way, or get it off Audible or something. Yeah, that's this episode's recommendation. Have a listen to it if you've got time. And that is it for this episode. I really hope you've enjoyed it. I want to say thanks again to Bob Baker, of course, for his segments, and to Adam for, well, it was ages ago we had the chats, but you know, I'm still playing it. So thanks again to Adam. Really hope you've enjoyed it. I'm going to be back again in 2 weeks' time. In the meantime, if you want to get in touch, you know what to do. Email me at totalchristmas@gmail.com. Go on the website, totalchristmaspodcast.com. I'll do my best to reply. I can't promise anything because I'm pretty useless. But I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. In the meantime, you know I love you. Merry, happy Christmas.
Don't you believe in Santa Claus?
Why should I? He never brought me anything.
That's because you were probably a naughty boy.
Yes. I guess I was no angel.